is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Mark Anderson from the Owensboro Thoroughbreds of the TBL, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coach, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave their success and your team's success to chance, or you may end up disappointed. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each year so they can discover how to think the game, lead your team, and run the show. They'll send them back to you a smarter player, a better leader, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in the locker room. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a camp near you. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinsling here tonight with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. The season is behind us.
No, Mike, the season is not behind us. The silly season is here.
The silly season is here. The NBA draft is behind us, but we are definitely looking forward to free agency, trades, and just seeing how the league is going to shape up as we head into the summer months and then eventually into what will be for the first time in three seasons, a normal
silly season
off season, a normal, hopefully season long rhythm. And I'm sure the players are looking forward to this longer off season. I know that they are going to enjoy getting some rest and just having what is amounts to a more normal off-season situation.
Well, so we'll really see. Want to say this is normal. That between all this stuff and all the stuff going on with our Browns, like I'm just I can't even keep track of it. The Irving stuff, the Brown stuff, the ridiculous things being put out there by certain analysts and commentators for a certain four-letter network.
Let's put it this way: it's never normal. There's nothing ever normal, at least in terms of
timing
on the calendar. It is the most normal season we've had in three. Yeah. So I think the players will take it.
Yep. Okay, so we're going to start by talking briefly about the draft. Luckily, we didn't promise a draft episode. Mike and I had great ideas of doing an episode right after the draft, and let's just say our situations didn't allow us to do that. We'll leave it at that, Mike.
We'll leave it there.
So apparently, they listened to our podcast the night before the draft, and my suggestion that the Duke guy was going to be the most prepared of the three. So he went number one, Paolo Banchero. Number two, the Gonzaga guy, Chet Holmgren. And number three, oh, I'm blanking.
Jabari.
Jabari, the guy who everyone thought was the consensus number. Like, they said the top three were top three, but the smoke signals had said that Jabari was going to go number one. But I kind of think that, who knows what in the end, like, time will tell, right? Who was the best of the three. But also, I really do think it comes down to fit. Like, and you know, how are these all going to work out? It remains to be seen. It depends on what does the Magic do? What do the Thunder do? I mean, they got those two guys that are him and
Poku.
That's going to be Chet and Poku is going to be anytime they're on the floor together. It's almost going to be similar to what the Cavs kind of put out there. Yeah, like two big guys that can
big guys that are skinny. Here's a question for you. I got a question for you. Right now, who weighs more, Chet and Poku or Shaq?
Oh, God. I don't know. I've seen a picture of Shaq's foot. I'm going to guess Shaq probably.
So that means Shaq has to be going probably, I think those two guys each weigh between like 190 and 195. So you're talking, let's say 380.
Man, I'm going to go those two guys.
Shaq go with 380?
No, I don't think Shaq's at 380. I don't think he's that
way.
No. Mike, maybe. I will tell you though, let me just say this. Those guys are like 7-footers, right?
Yes.
They weigh 190. They weigh the same weight that I weigh as a 6'4 guy who's not an athletic ability. Like, I'm in decent shape, right? Okay.
That's skinny because I don't have any muscle.
I mean, I personally don't have any muscle, like literally hardly at all. And these guys are 7 feet tall and they weigh about the same as I weigh. That's scary. And I'm not overweight either, obviously, but I think I'm like 185 and they're basically pushing like right on my weight. That cannot be a good long-term situation. They better get to the gym. I'm just going to leave it at that because they're going to get beat up out there.
All right. Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
So let's do the internet Twitter start bench cut. But I'm going to do it as superstar, average player, bust with these three guys. You got to label them one of the three. How do you go? How do you label them? So you got superstar, you got...
Well, the bust is Chet.
Decent player.
Bust is Chet. I think the superstar is Jabari, and I think the other, Paolo, is the average player.
Okay. That's good. I like it. I like how definitive you were, because I think I'm going to have a little bit harder time. I think I'm going to go Paolo as the superstar. I think I'm going to go Chet as the bust, and I think I'm going to go Jabari as... the good player.
So we agree on the bust. we agree on the bust.
And I don't necessarily think he's going to be a bust. I just think he's the most likely of those three.
Yeah.
I think when you look at these three guys and you say Jabari's a 6'10 guy who can shoot the lights out, there's always going to be a place for that guy in the league. If you're 6'10 and you can shoot threes and you're as athletic as he is, you're going to be a player in this league for a long, long time. So to me, he's got a very, very high floor where I don't think Jabari Smith is going to be a bust in any way, shape, or form where he's not going to be in the league 10 years from now. I think he's going to be in the league 10 years from now. Banchero, I think what he does and what he brings offensively gives you the most thought that he could be a guy that you could center your offense around and that he could end up being a superstar player from that standpoint just because of the offensive skill set that he brings. And yet at the same time, I think you probably would argue, and this is, I think, what people argued about before the draft, is that Chet probably has both the lowest floor and maybe the highest ceiling simply because of what he can do defensively with his length and with his timing as a shot blocker. And then you look at the skills that he possesses on offense, there's the makings in there of a guy who could be a really, really good player on offense combined with somebody who could be an anchor to your defense. Let's put it that way. And so I think that
when you look at Chet, you just have to look at his body and be like, I don't know that a guy like that can survive as the number one player on your team. I don't see that. I think, to me, what I think Chet's going to be is he's going to end up being a really high level role player, a guy who can plug into different places, who's going to be a very good defensive player, but who's never going to be able to carry the load offensively that certainly that Banchero, I think, is capable of. And even Jabari, with his shooting, I know the knock on him was that he doesn't put it on the floor and he's not playmaking and making other people better. But with his athleticism, I'm talking about Jabari, with his athleticism, I think that the potential for him to develop into that is there. Whereas Chet, I just don't know.
Yeah, if he's as, like we said, as light and not as fit as some of the same 7-footers, I just don't know. He's not going to be able to get soaking wet to weigh 200 pounds before the game. You know what I mean? That concerns me with his height. I mean, I don't know. What does Mobley weigh?
Mobley's got to weigh 220, 215, yeah. somewhere in there. Mobley's skinny. You look at Mobley last year and the number of times that he just kind of got pushed off his spot. Now, granted, I think that right now at this moment, Chet is probably more of a perimeter threat than Mobley. I think he's probably got a more developed shot.
Mobley's 215 according to NBA.com.
So if Chet's 190, you're still 25 pounds away. And Chet, I think, is probably 2 inches taller than Mobley as well. So there's a difference. But I still think Mobley last year got pushed around. There were lots of times where Mobley would drive in and somebody would bump him and push him off his spot. And that's not to say that you can't develop and be strong and you don't have to weigh a ton to be a really strong player. And I think Mobley is going to get there. But when you look at Mobley, you're not shocked by his appearance and saying, oh my gosh, this guy is super skinny. So I don't know what to expect from Chet. I mean, I think, like I said, he has the highest ceiling. I think he probably has the lowest floor where if he really does develop and grow into his body that maybe there's the potential for him to be a superstar, but I see him, as I said, as being more of a high-level role player. What's really interesting about this draft is the fact that Banchero never went to Orlando, never worked out for Orlando, didn't seem like there was any intel whatsoever heading into the draft that he was going to be drafted by the Magic up until like the last 24 hours where the betting line started to swing back and forth and people were wondering, well, who knows what and why and how's that information getting out? But it's really, really unique that a team who's number one, it's not like you're trying to hide your intentions of who you want to pick because somebody might jump in and grab the guy you want. You have the number one pick, so nobody can do anything. So it would seem like there must have been some hesitancy on Paolo's part that maybe he didn't want to go to Orlando. So I don't know. It's intriguing, and it'll be interesting to hear what those stories are as we learn more about what went on in those 6 weeks between the lottery and the draft. What's that?
Reminds me of the Cavs drafting Anthony Bennett because I don't believe he worked out for the Cavs either.
That draft, though, was completely different in that I think in this draft there was a consensus that these three guys were all, depending upon your need, might have been worthy of being the number one pick. Whereas in the Bennett draft, I don't think anybody thought that there was any player that was worthy of being the number one pick. It was like, ooh, this is not the year that you want to have the number one pick.
Oladipo's the best player out of that draft, right?
Giannis.
Oh, yeah, I forget. Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, Giannis was not in any way, shape, or form a viable. It's not like Giannis was a guy that people were sitting around debating whether or not he should be the guy who was number one. I mean, I think if you went back and did it again, knowing what you know now, but also taking into account what we knew then, I think, yeah, then probably Oladipo would be the number one pick. But you look at it and you say Oladipo had that 1 year where he was all NBA with the Pacers, and he's had a couple other good seasons, but he's been hurt a lot. And I would say mostly people would say that he hasn't lived up to even his potential. And clearly Bennett was a mistake when the Cavs picked him. And Giannis obviously turned out to be the guy coming out of that draft. But like I said, nobody in the top 10 was thinking, oh man, we should consider Giannis at the number one spot. He was a guy that was completely off the radar and was more of a flyer for Milwaukee.
Yeah. I got, yeah, it makes sense.
Did you watch the movie yet?
I did not. Did you?
I did, actually. I did.
You watched the movie? Well, oh, my God.
Yeah, and I stayed awake for it. It was pretty good. I stayed awake for it. So, yeah, it actually wasn't bad. If you want to watch it with your kids, it's a good movie to watch with the kids. I think it's...
I don't think they have any interest in it, like, sadly.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Yeah, anyway, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see them having any interest in it because they don't really follow basketball. So, as evidenced by their playing at camp this week, we'll just
leave
it at that.
Fun. They're having
by the way,
fun.
By the way, Mike,
matters.
I'm just going to throw this out there. This is for everyone. We're currently doing basketball camps. We're wrapping up the last week of camp, and I kind of thought, Mike, I think when the season starts, you know, like TNT has Shaqt and a Fool and ESPN has the not top 10. I think we have a new segment and that was inspired by you and your daughter. There are clowns everywhere.
There are clowns everywhere. I like it.
We pick our goofiest or funniest moment from the week.
All right. I like it.
There are clowns everywhere. And there's no context needed.
That's become my new family, my favorite saying now with the family. Yeah, anywhere we are, we're just like, we're walking around. We're like, there's clowns everywhere. So yeah, I like it. Let's bring it to the pod. I like it.
Yeah, so that might be, I don't know if that's like, maybe that's like a middle of the podcast segment. We don't have to do one now because I'm springing it on you.
Wait, I got one.
Okay.
Orlando having the number one pick and not interviewing or bringing the guy in.
That's a good one.
That had to be from Banchero for some reason not wanting to go to Orlando, right?
You'd have to imagine. How about this one?
But you wonder why? Like why? I mean, I guess you could say the Thunder is a better run organization with Presti, but for the last 5 years, they've basically been trying to lose and hoard draft picks. So I'm not sure why I'd be super excited to go to the Thunder. And then you have Houston, where I don't know what's so great about Houston's organization.
I don't know.
Nothing that I can think of that jumps out at me like, man, I'd way rather go to the Thunder or to the Rockets than go to the Magic. That to me doesn't make any sense. I don't know that I'd rather live in Oklahoma City or Houston as opposed to Orlando.
There's no income tax in Florida either. Come on.
Right. So you have that. I guess Houston has the same thing in Texas, but it just looks, let's put it this way. I don't see, it was clear he was going to go to one of those three places, and I don't see where Oklahoma City or Houston are that much more desirable of locations than Orlando. And I don't think either of those organizations leaps out at me as being like, oh, I got to go play for that organization over this one. Now, granted, the Magic have not been very good and they've been worse than these other two teams for a while. But I think you look at the rosters and I'm not so sure that if Banchero's good, especially in a year or two, I'm not so sure that Orlando isn't in a better position than those other two teams because I don't really know. For sure, it looks like Jalen Green's going to be good. It looks like Şengün's going to be good, but the Rockets, I don't know. The Thunder, okay, we know Shea's good. You know Giddey's good, but what are they doing? Are they how much longer? How many more years are they going to keep trying to lose? One more year, right? They want to get Wembanyama next year. I think everybody wants to lose to get the 7-2 French guy. So we'll see.
Well, here's my clowns everywhere.
Okay.
And I know we probably have one other thing we want to talk about with when it comes to the draft, but Kyrie Irving deciding to opt in with his player option after all the nonsense and then releases this statement via Shams. Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall. What the heck does that even mean?
I'm right there with you.
All right. So as far as the rest of the drafts is concerned, I think there's only two things we want to talk about. So I think it makes sense. Let's talk about the Cavs and then we'll talk about the Knicks. Are those the only two things that we really want to spend our time on?
Well, quickly, the Kings at number four did the opposite of what everybody thought, right? They thought Jaden Ivey was going to be the pick and the Kings apparently looked at it and we can't pair him with the De'Aaron Fox. So let's not take the guy who seems like he's the consensus fourth best player. Instead, let's draft Keegan Murray. Look, no shade on Keegan Murray. He may end up being a very good professional player, and Jaden Ivey may not end up being a very good professional player. But based on everything that we know saw red. Experts, it seems like the Kings passed on a guy who most everybody thought was the fourth best player in the draft, and some people had him ranked even higher than that. And Keegan Murray sounds like he's a guy who most experts, again, thought that he's going to be a good player, but his ceiling is not nearly as high as Jaden Ivey's. And it couldn't have worked out better for the Pistons. Ivey's seems like a perfect fit next to Cade Cunningham. So kudos to the Pistons for having it work out. And I guess maybe the Kings will see if they get the last laugh. But I would say history would tell you that chances are karma is going to get the last laugh on the Kings.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so the Cavs. I'm not even going to try to say that guy's name because I'm going to screw it up. Ochai Agbaji. Dennis Schroeder, Ochai Agbaji.
There you go.
No, so Cavs select Ochai Agbaji. And I don't think we need to spend too much time. We're like deep digging into it. With what was left on the board, I mean, I know you and I had talked about them taking Branham at 14. While that probably would have been the more favorable pick for Cleveland fans because it's Ohio State, I don't know. Who knows how good that player is going to be. I actually feel happy for Branham because he ended up at San Antonio, and that's going to be a perfect fit because that's going to be a place where he's going to learn and do well. So at least he's in a good situation. I'm more happy about them taking Mobley's brother. Quite frankly, that was my favorite move the Cavs made over the draft. I don't know how you feel, but I know you had some concerns about the guy we picked. So Ochai. So I don't know. You want to share your concerns or?
Sure. Let's talk. The Mobley pick was, I think, made a lot of sense. Right? You bring in his brother if you think the guy can play in the league, and you bring his brother in, and it's just one more thing to keep Evan Mobley happy, which, as we talked about all throughout last year, what's Mobley's ceiling? I mean, throughout most of the season last year, we were talking about, could he be one of the five best players in the league at some point? And when you factor in what he does defensively, and then you factor in his passing, I just think that eventually he's got that type of potential. Will he ever get there? I don't know. But he certainly has that type of potential. And so clearly, a guy like that in a franchise like the Cavs, you want to be able to do everything you possibly can to keep that guy wanting to be a part of your franchise. And so if drafting his brother and having his brother on the roster makes sense, why not? So I agree with you there. I think that was a good move. Agbaji, I think when you look at it, I think what you have to say to yourself is, okay, what was the type of player that they were looking for, how well does he fit, and then what were the alternatives that you could have picked had you not taken Agbaji? So first of all, what they were looking for was a guy who could play on the wing, who could shoot threes, and who could defend. And so Agbaji fits that description pretty well. He's a guy who, over the course of his career, really improved as a three-point shooter, is long, defended at a high level, was the MVP of the Final Four, so played well in big games. Downside, he's a senior, so he's been around for 4 years, which you go back 15 or 20 years ago, it wouldn't have mattered, but these days it matters because you've already missed out on potentially whatever, 3 seasons of the guy being a part of your franchise, so he's already a little bit older, although you could also look at it and say now he fits right in the timeline with the guys they brought in before. So I don't know that that makes a whole lot of difference. If the guy's a good player, he's a good player. I think what Agbaji brought that the other two guys that I probably would have considered with that pick, I think when you're looking at it, you already mentioned Branham, that Branham's probably a more dynamic scorer, especially off the dribble. And then I think the other guy was AJ Griffin from Duke, who came into Duke last year as, I think he was a consensus top 10 recruit. And because of the talent that the Blue Devils had last year, he didn't necessarily get a lot of opportunities on ball to show what he can do. But I don't think he had the same defensive profile as Agbaji, and neither did Branham. So I think that's probably what swayed the Cavs, is just what Agbaji could bring on the defensive end of the floor. We've been saying it for the last two or three podcasts that really what they're looking for is Okoro with a jump shot. Because Okoro, what he brings on the defensive end of the floor, his just offensive game hasn't developed quite as fast as I'm sure the Cavs would have hoped. And who knows? Okoro could still end up being that guy. But Agbaji fits the definition of what they were looking for going into the draft. So I think that's why they went with him. Although I think that probably Griffin and Branham might have more dynamic games off the dribble potentially and might ultimately end up being better offensive players. I think the fact that Agbaji could bring it to you on both ends of the floor, that I think that's what swayed the Cavs. So I was okay with the pick. I didn't love it, but again, at number 14, I'm not sure you're going to love anybody that you pick because you're not getting a surefire starter at number 14, but you could also get a guy who could end up being a star. There's always a guy almost in every draft when you look at it from 11 to 20. There's always one guy at least in that group that ends up being an all-star player. And you just got to hope that maybe you hit on that particular guy. Who knows? Then there's going to be a lot of these other guys that aren't even going to make it in the league. And they might sign their rookie deal and be out of the league by the time they're in their third or fourth year. They're not even going to get a second contract. So who knows? It's a crapshoot at that point. And like I said, I think Agbaji fits what they were looking for.
Yep.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, so the last thing when it comes from the draft, and it'll lead into our free agent discussion. The Knicks traded everything. I mean, they traded their pick. They're clearing cap space. They made another trade today, Mike. Did you see they made another trade today?
I did not see the trade today.
So to go along with this, the trade they made today, clears even more cap space.
Fournier?
No. ESPN, the Knicks have cleared $30 million in salary cap space to offer Dallas's Jalen Brunson with the following trade. The Knicks are trading center Nerlens Noel, Alec Burks to the Pistons. The Knicks will unload $19 million more in salary, clearing this cap space to try and sign free agent Jalen Brunson. The Knicks are including two future second-round picks and cash in the deal to incentivize the Pistons, sources tell ESPN. New York will also send Detroit back its 2023 second-round pick, a 2024 second-round pick via Miami, and $6 million, sources tell us ESPN.
All right, well, let's talk about that from the Pistons' standpoint, first of all, which is, I know we're talking about the
Detroit
Knicks.
Detroit is eager to utilize center Nerlens Noel and guards Alec Burks next season. GM Troy Weaver had Noel on his team in Oklahoma City, and Burks is an ideal veteran to mentor the Pistons' talented young group of guard.
So I think when you look at this, heading into the draft, most people thought that the Pistons were in great position to be able to offer DeAndre Ayton a max contract. And it definitely appears, based on the draft day trade where they got Duren, and now the kid, the center out of Memphis, and now you pick up Nerlens Noel and you pick up those two contracts, I don't see any way that Ayton is a free agent destination. Ayton's not, Detroit is no longer a free agent destination for DeAndre Ayton, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I agree.
And then from the Knicks standpoint, it comes down to this. Why are you building your team around Jalen Brunson? Can you make the case for me?
I don't know, but apparently there was some, according to Winhurst, I heard on, or was it Winhurst, or someone said that when the Knicks signed Brunson, the Knicks feel like they're a championship contender.
For the G League?
I don't know. I don't get it.
I mean, I like Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson's fine. He's a good player. I mean, he's a good player, but he's not a guy that you're going to build a championship team around. I mean, at best, I don't know where he ranks in the league when you start talking about the top.
Oh, God. He's not in the top.
Is he in the top 50?
No way. No. No. No.
Okay, well, we're not going to go through the top 50 players right now to figure out whether he is or isn't.
Maybe in the 70s. Come on now.
Can you win a title with Jalen Brunson as your third best player?
Third best. Perhaps.
I would say no. Perhaps. I think he's got to be your fourth best player. Just at his size. Look, he was really good in the playoffs this year, and he was really good when Luka was out this season. But I still think, as strong as he is, as tough as he is, as good as a finisher as he's been inside, I don't see Jalen Brunson as being the centerpiece of an NBA championship offense. And we know little guys defensively, it just doesn't work in the playoffs. It's hard. It's really, really hard. The rest of your team better be really, really good defensively to make up for a guy who's going to be 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2". You better have four great defenders around that little guard. And the Knicks, you look at what they have left on their roster. You got Barrett. You got Mitchell Robinson, who's a free agent. You got Obi Toppin. You got Quickly. You got Tibbs coaching that team. I guess Tibbs is happy because they don't have any rookies, so he doesn't have to play. He doesn't have to worry about playing any rookies. He's just got veterans. I don't know. To me, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense if that's the move. That's the big move that the Knicks are trying to make. It just seems to me that if you are the New York Knicks, that your plan of continuously chasing free agents, falling short of all the marquee guys in the last 15 years, and then the track record of giving big contracts to secondary stars, show me when that's worked. Show me when it's worked in New York. Show me when it's worked anywhere. It hasn't. And look, I know that putting together an NBA roster is not easy because there are really only 5, 6, 7, 8 guys that, you know, that can lead you to a title, that are good enough to be the best player on a championship team. And so all the other teams that don't have those guys have to spend money. We'll talk about probably at least one guy that fits that description here in a minute, but it just doesn't, to me, if you're building around Jalen Brunson, if that's where you're spending your money as the Knicks, you're basically sentencing yourself to being, I would say at best, a 5-8 seed in the East playoffs. And at worst, you're on the outside looking in.
I agree. Yeah. You're not.
And I like Brunson.
Yeah. So
I just don't want to build my team around him.
Yeah. All right. So I guess, does it make sense to kind of just go through what's happened? So we're going to go back, Mike. We're going to go back a few days. So obviously we already discussed the Kyrie Irving signing. Or opt in, so we don't need to. Do you want to discuss Kyrie anymore, Mike? Like, he's a weird dude, and we've said that so many times. We can only say it so many times. He's a weird dude. Does anyone really know what his agenda is? The answer is no. And
do you want him on your team?
No, I don't.
No, you don't.
I want 2016 Kyrie. I don't want current Kyrie.
Do the Nets want him on their team this year?
Probably not.
It all comes down to the relationship with Durant, right? And
yep.
Whether or not Kyrie being there facilitates Durant staying, whether Kyrie leaving would facilitate Durant also walking out the door, who knows? if you have the best version of Kyrie Irving, which the odds of you getting the best version of Kyrie Irving for an entire season and low. A postseason is really low. I don't know what it is, 10%, 15%, but it is low. But if you did have the best version of Kyrie Irving and you had a healthy Kevin Durant, you put together a roster around those guys and I think you're in the title mix. But the odds of that happening, I've said it ever since this team got put together when they threw Harden into this mix too. It just doesn't make sense. And you look at Ben Simmons, who will not have played for whatever, 18 months since he last set foot on an NBA floor by the time he plays a regular season game next year. And who knows about his back beyond his mental condition. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck, Nets fans.
Yep. All right. So then the next one we have. Oh, the fun one I forgot to say is Steve Clifford back as the coach, Mike.
Back at Charlotte. That doesn't, when you start thinking about that, and look, Steve Clifford's Mike obviously Brown. A good coach, Mike Brown in Sacramento. Look, guys get second opportunities, third opportunities all the time, and Steve Clifford's a really good coach. Whether or not it makes sense for him to go back to this Charlotte team, I think they were looking for a guy who was going to emphasize defense and try to get Lonzo on board with that. Because
you mean LaMelo?
There's been an increase. LaMelo, sorry. Well, I always do that. That you got to get LaMelo on board with playing defense, because it's interesting. If you go back to the discussion at the very beginning of the season and even into last season, there was so much discussion of LaMelo's the next guy. Man, he's going to be a guy that you can win with for years and years and years, and he's going to be a championship player. And I think by the end of the season, a lot of that sentiment had kind of disappeared. And there were a lot of people thinking that LaMelo was just going to be sort of an offense first flash guy and not a guy that was going to dig in and defend that you could really build a championship team around. So maybe you bring in Clifford, he gets LaMelo to buy in, and now you not only have his offensive brilliance, but maybe you turn it around for him on the defensive end of the floor. I know that Charlotte brought in a couple centers so to shore up that position, which was clearly a weakness. So you do that, and maybe Clifford's the guy that unlocks some of the things. They got to bring back Bridges, which their GM, Mitch Kupchak, says they're going to do, but at what number? Do you really want to pay a max contract to Miles Bridges? I'm not sure. Just like Jalen Brunson, if Bridges is your, maybe he can be your third best player, more likely I'd say your fourth best player. I'm leery of how much money I want to pay those kind of guys.
Yeah, I agree. It's not something you want to, speaking of paying someone lots of money, John Wall.
John Wall, $47 million.
Got bought out for, you know, of his $47.4 million contract, the Rockets are only going to pay $40.9 million.
They say what a steal for the Rockets.
And he's going to go to the Clippers.
Paying him $40 million. Wouldn't it be great to have somebody pay you $40 million to go to away? That'd be pretty good.
There's someone I would like deal. To pay $40 million.
That's a pretty good deal.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Anyway, so he's going to the Clippers, which I think it's a good move for the Clippers if he's good. I mean,
yeah. Why not?
Sure.
Why not? I mean, John Wall at his best, and again, he's not going to be at his best, but even the best version of
great passer.
John Wall at this point, really good passer, a guy who knows how to play the game, a guy who in his prime probably was a little bit overrated defensively, but he's a guy who certainly shouldn't be a complete liability on that end of it. It's still weird to me that Houston couldn't use him at all. I mean, I know they wanted to play their young guys and give Jalen Green the ball and give Kevin Porter reps and whatever, but it just feels like, hey, why not put John Wall out there and help you to run some semblance of an actual NBA offense? But that's neither here nor there. I think he'll help the Clippers in some small way. Does he push them over the top? No, obviously everything with the Clippers hinges on the health of Kawhi and Paul George, and then you go from there. If those two guys are healthy, the Clippers are going to be right there heading into the season as a title favorite, because the roster that they have around Paul George and Kawhi, they got a lot of length. They got a lot of wings. They can defend. They can be very, very versatile. And now you put John Wall in there as the backup to Reggie Jackson. You got Kennard handling the ball. There's a lot of good things that could happen for the Clippers if those two guys are healthy. But as we said with Kyrie, I don't know what you put the odds at both Paul George and Kawhi staying healthy for an entire season, but it's got to be below 50%. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, less than 25%.
Anyways. All right, there. All right. All right. You're more pessimistic than me.
Yeah. All right. So then moving into that, that was all the stuff leading into today, and everything else that we're going to talk about has happened today. Now, there's other things that have happened that we probably aren't going to talk about, more formality stuff, but Westbrook obviously opts into his $47 million option if he was stupid if he didn't. So Westbrook has opted into that. Good luck, Lakers, because no one's going to want that.
You don't think he could have gotten more in the open market?
No.
Okay. All right. You're probably right.
We don't need to talk about that anymore. All right. The Utah Jazz have offered, and they're working on the final arrangements of hiring Will Hardy, a guy I've never heard of before, to be their next head coach. Hardy played Division III basketball at Williams College and started as a video room coordinator under Greg Popovich in San Antonio. David Fizdale has also agreed to become an associate GM. He was coached for 18 seasons, and now he's decided to move into upper management. So he will work with Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck, the regular GM.
Will Hardy, 34 years old. It's pretty good.
Youngest coach in the youngest active coach.
Yep. Kudos to him. Yep. Kudos to him.
So he beat out no one that's really huge in name other than Adrian Griffin from the Raptors. He'd be the only one I recognize their name. Then other things that happened today. Tony Bradley exercised a $2 million player option for the Bulls. That's not a big news story. Zubac got a three-year, $33 million extension with the Clippers. The Clippers had declined their team option for $7.5 million, but then extended him this way.
Probably and makes that, sense. It's a good move for the Clippers and for Zubac.
Yeah, yeah. And then Taurean Prince agreed to a two-year, $16 million contract extension with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I liked Taurean Prince when he was here.
He seemed like a good dude.
Guy who could shoot it, play a little defense. Certainly he's a good bench player. I mean, he's a guy who, he's number 8, 9, 10 in your rotation. He's a guy that's going to come in and be serviceable, do some good things for you. So if you're Minnesota and you're continuing to build and try to continue to grow the way you have over the course of this season, I think signing Prince to that deal makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Okay, so that's all I have. I mean, Colin Sexton got a qualifying offer, but that really just makes him a restricted free agent. No other huge names or huge stories, Mike.
Does Colin Sexton end up back on the Cavs? What do you think? If you had to bet, you think he ends up on the Cavs on opening night?
I actually would like to say yes, but I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it, Mike. I really am. I think a sign and trade, if they can get something that works, would make sense. But I don't know. I don't know what you can get for Colin Sexton with him being out all last year. And here's my other thing, Mike. I mean, all things seem to be pointing to Ricky Rubio making a return, but he's not going to be ready until January. So what if you signed Sexton and have him go for a few months and prove that he can play and try to up his value and then maybe trade him? I don't know. But also, I don't know, if he's playing that well, do I really want to get rid of him just because Rubio's come back? I don't know what the answer is, Mike. I don't know. I think I want him on the team. I just don't know if it's going to happen.
I'd like to see him back because I think when you start talking about what Sexton has been to this point in his career, he's basically only played on losing versions of the Cavs team. Now, you could say that the way he plays was maybe a piece of why this team was losing, but I just think you look at the personnel and the changes that happened this year – bringing in Mobley, having Jared Allen for a full season, the emergence of Garland. I would like to see the things that Sexton brings to the table as an offensive player and see whether or not he could do it on a winning team. And so I'd like to take a look at him for a year. Heck, even let him play under the qualifying offer, and then you see what you got and whether or not it makes sense. We talked about it earlier that it's really hard, and this has been a point of discussion since they drafted Darius Garland, that I'm not sure that you can play two guards who are both 6'2 and under as your starting backcourt. But I do think that when you look at this Cavaliers team, why did they bring in Caris LeVert? Because they needed somebody beyond Darius Garland who could create off the dribble and get him some offense. And Sexton has shown in his career his ability to generate his own offense. And he was starting to show some signs before he got hurt that maybe the playmaking was starting to come around. He's never going to be a natural playmaker or a guy that's going to get a ton of assists. He's not going to be on the Darius Garland level when it comes to that. But man, the guy can score. And he scored really efficiently. 22.5 points a game as a guy who was, whatever, 23 years old or 22 years old when he did it. There aren't many guys in the history of the league who have been able to do that. So I'd like to see him bring Garland. I'm sorry. I'd like to see him bring Sexton back and just see what he looks like in a winning environment. But I don't know. I don't know if they will or they won't. I don't know how much they're going to have to pay him in order to do that. And I'm not sure, as you said, what they can get for him. What's out there in a trade market? Who's looking for a guy with Sexton's skill set? And then if you're willing to give something up to get Sexton, what is it that the Cavs would want back? And would you be able to get somebody who has the same theoretical upside as Colin Sexton? So I'd rather see him keep Sexton around for a year, see whether or not he makes sense. And he's also seemed like he's been a guy that's bought into Cleveland. And last year, you just think about how he was on the bench and just how excited he was. And it seems like he's bought in with these guys. And so when you have a guy that's bought in, especially when you're talking about a young team or you got a bunch of guys that are around the same age, and the fact that Sexton could have been at home pouting or he could have been sitting at the end of the bench, but instead he was up, man. He was excited. And when you see that, it makes you think that that's a guy that is bought in. And so you'd like to maybe keep him around, especially with the skill level that he has and the improvement that he's shown in the short amount of time that he's been in the league. So I'd like to see him keep Sexton.
Like I said, I would love to have him. I just don't see it. I just don't know. I'm 50-50 on it, Mike. I really am. I'm 50-50. All right. So I guess the only other thing we could talk about some of the big name free agents that could come off the board. I don't know if we want to. I don't necessarily know that I have a prediction as to where they're going to end up.
Let's just talk Beal. Is Beal going to be in Washington? I think he's in Washington. I think he signs whatever. Yeah, I think he signs whatever the Supermax is, and Washington just is like, hey, we're not going to be able to do any better, and we know we're kind of sentencing ourselves to, at best, a middling playoff team and probably not even that. But it comes back to you got to spend the money somewhere. Beal has sort of shown that he wants to be in Washington. He's a guy who 2 years ago led the league in scoring. I think they're probably going to give him the money, and then Beal stays and they try to make the best of it and see if they can make it work around him. You're dooming yourself to not being a championship team for the duration of that contract probably, but I mean, if you're in Washington, you haven't had a championship team since the 70s, so what's it matter?
Agree. LaVine, he's going to end up in the Bulls, right?
I think they have to bring him back. If you're Chicago, I don't think you can say we're building around 34 or 35-year-old DeMar DeRozan. I think that even though DeRozan was arguably their number one last year, because of LaVine's age and because of what he's been able to do, not only last year but the year before, and I know that he's had some knee issues which could complicate matters, but I do think that if you're Chicago, he's a guy that you can't let him walk out the door. You got to do everything you can to keep him. And who knows, maybe LaVine thinks he wants to be somewhere else, but I'm not sure where the perfect situation would be for Zach LaVine. I think Zach LaVine probably, he probably has to be, again, I would say your, I don't think you can win with Zach LaVine as your second best player, but maybe as your third. He's certainly a guy that offensively any team in the league would love to have. Defensively, another story, but there's not a team in the league that wouldn't like to add Zach LaVine from an offensive standpoint, what he can do shooting off the catch and creating off the dribble.
Yep. We don't want to talk about that guy. I'm skipping him.
Skipping Harden? Is Harden on the Sixers?
No.
I say yes.
Okay. Ayton, I don't know where he's going to end up. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think he's going to stay in Phoenix. I don't think anyone's going to offer.
If he stays in Phoenix, that's going to be an unhappy marriage. I can tell you that right now. I think you're right. I think he probably, if I had to put the odds on it, I'd probably say it's above 50% that he stays with Phoenix. But I think from the moment he signs with Phoenix, he's going to be unhappy and the team's going to be unhappy. That's what I think is going to happen. I think it's just going to eventually he's going to end up getting traded, or he'll be disgruntled, or he's going to be a guy who's never going to live up to his potential because the Suns have just botched this thing. And it doesn't seem like there's a really great destination out there for Ayton. And what are centers at this point? Like, I don't know. I look, DeAndre Ayton's a good player. And you think about how good he was in the Suns playoff run all the way up through the finals with the Bucks, but I don't want to pay DeAndre Ayton, who's, again, a traditional center. He's a guy who is not, he's not a seven-footer that's putting the ball on the floor. He's a traditional center, and I don't want to pay that guy $34 million. I just don't.
Yep. All right. Bridges, he's going to end up staying in Charlotte. He's going to get paid, but he's going to stay.
I agree.
Brunson, we've already talked about. Anthony Simons, I think he's going to stay in Portland.
He's a restricted free agent. I don't think they're going to let him go. With as good as he was following Lillard's injury, I don't see how they let him walk. Maybe if he was unrestricted, but I don't think Portland can afford to let him walk out the door.
Same with Dort. I don't think Dort leaves the Thunder. I think he stays. Right?
Yeah,
team
I agree.
Option.
Yeah.
It's a team option.
Yeah, I agree. I think why wouldn't you bring him back? He's a guy, I guess if you're again trying to lose, maybe you get rid of him if you're trying to lose. But he just seems like a guy that you would want in your building as a guy who's defense first and who's built his reputation in the league as being a hard nosed defender. That just seems like a guy that you'd want in your building on your team if you're Oklahoma City.
Sounds good. Is there anyone else we want to talk about, Mike, in this list?
I think the only other guy that catches my eye as I'm looking through here and I'm just kind of scrolling through, I'd say Tyus Jones as a backup. I think that there's a good market for – there's going to be a lot of teams out there that want Tyus Jones. I think the Cavs are going to be among one of those teams that if they could bring in Tyus Jones at the right price, I think they'd definitely be interested. Obviously, they're going to go back and talk to Rubio and see if that makes sense. But Tyus Jones, there's a lot of teams. I know we talked about him in regards to maybe like even the Celtics, that teams that need a guy either as their starter or as a guy off the bench to get them organized and make sure that they put everything together. I think to me, Tyus Jones, there's going to be a lot of teams that want Tyus Jones. My dog wants Tyus Jones.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Mike? Anything else we need to talk about? I think that's all we need to talk about tonight.
I think that's it. I think we covered it. We got it. So by the time we talk next week, there will be probably some more player movement because free agency starts on what, July 1 is when they can start talking, or yeah. I forget the exact dates, but I think that there's probably going to be some things that get announced and start coming out even before that. So we shall see. Cavs have some interesting decisions to make. Clearly the Sexton one being the biggest, but I'm excited for where the Cavs are, and we will see what they can do during this offseason to continue to improve their team, and we are headed for a very interesting, silly season.
Sounds great, and always remember the new mantra of WPants 5. There are clowns everywhere.
And we're going to see that in free agency. There are clowns everywhere. So I'm looking forward to the new segment.
That should be fun. I think we're going to put that in the middle of the show, Mike. Middle of the show.
Okay, I like it.
That'll be a good clear clowns everywhere.
Perfect. All right. All right. So we'll wrap it up there. Just remember, there are clowns everywhere. Thanks for checking out the Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.